Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have Kristen Stutzman. She is a new evangelist for Xamarin, and she specializes in iOS. And I am extremely pleased to have her here today to talk about iOS 9. Kristen, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. And glad to have you here. And when did you start with Xamarin?
So I started with Xamarin about 4 months ago in August. And before this, I had just worked for a consulting company, one of Xamarin's partners, actually. So I've been using the product for a year and a half or so. And yeah, I've been on board for about 4 months.
A year and a half. Well, from what I have heard and read of your material, you came up to speed awfully quickly.
Yeah, I mean, kind of that's why I did this development career, was to be learning new stuff all the time. And yeah, so I actually came from a native iOS background and then jumped on board with Xamarin. And now I love C Sharp. So pretty obsessed with everything that we have here. So
that's very cool. Now, you're working with James Montemagno, and we know that James is a machine turning out incredible amounts of material while traveling all over the country. How are the two of you going to divide up that work?
I was brought on board because James is on the West Coast is where he lives in Seattle. And so I'm based here in Boston. And we both are kind of everywhere, but we sort of kind of split the U.S. in half. So I've got kind of the East Coast and Central area, and he has kind of the West and the South. Of course, there are sometimes when we have to cross paths if one of us is busy or something like that. But it's nice because then, you know, cuts down on his travel time as well as mine. Gives us more time to actually build fun stuff with Xamarin. So it's the idea.
And are you also accumulating millions of miles on your frequent flyer?
Oh, yes, for sure. I'm saving those up. Take a nice, what's it called?
Vacation.
International. Yeah, international.
Remember that word, vacation? Yeah. That's when you actually stop working for sure.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I forgot about it. Yeah, so that's what I'm saving for. I'm actually at, like, almost to status already on an airline. So
that's great. I wanted to focus on iOS 9 with you, if that's all right.
For sure.
And talk about some of the features that are new in iOS 9. But before we zero in on specific features, maybe you can help put that into context from the viewpoint of a Xamarin developer, because there are three ways of developing with Xamarin, to my mind. One is cross-platform with forms, the other is cross-platform without forms, and the third is to a specific platform, that is iOS or Android or I suppose Windows Phone as well. So how does the iOS 9 update affect those approaches?
Yeah, so it's definitely going to affect the traditional approach, which would be kind of just the not forms approach, either just iOS or whether you're doing cross-platform iOS, Android, a little bit more. And I think that's just because you're accessing more of those native SDKs directly when you're doing the traditional approach. So there are things in iOS 9 that you can take advantage of with forms. And then there are other things that are not quite yet, because, of course, as we know with forms, it's really out of the box. It's things that are equal across all three platforms. So something like 3D touch, where you've got, you know, that pressure sensitivity aspect, is not going to be available in forms because that's kind of an iOS specific thing. But there are blog posts that we've got out of like how to take advantage of some of this new iOS stuff in forms. And of course, if you're doing traditional iOS or even forms, it's still good to know about all these new features that are coming out just to kind of keep up with Apple and kind of how it's moving along.
Right. And you can, of course, use any of the iOS features by using the dependency service and simply having the iOS feature available when you're on the iOS platform and some default when you're on the Android platform. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. And if you want, I can give you a link to it, but we've got a really good blog post that one of our employees wrote on his personal blog about how to take advantage of this iOS 9 stuff in forms.
Great. Yes, I'd like to add that link to the show page, and also we'll add a link to the overview of iOS 9 called Introduction to iOS 9, appropriately. And let's focus in for a moment. You mentioned 3D touch. And as far as I understand it, that is available only on the iPhone 6 and 6S. I'm sorry, on the 6S and the 6S Plus. Is it on any other platform right now, or it's just those phones?
Yeah, so it's just those devices and just with Apple as of right now. So they had a new technology piece that they kind of had to put in behind the screen there to be able to tell how hard you're pressing the screen, because as of right now, that doesn't exist in the older devices. So it's just there for those devices, but you can actually look up. I mean, a lot of people have actually moved on to those devices, especially with Apple's new payment plan that you can do. I think it's actually going to even increase the amount of times people are upgrading to the newest and best thing. So it's definitely good to take advantage of those features.
I have to say, I was surprised that it's not on the iPad Pro.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder why they did that.
I kept pushing on the screen and it just, you know, did its little wiggle. So, I don't know why. 3D Touch comes in three flavors. Can you walk us through how that works?
Yeah, so there's three different ways. The first is pressure sensitivity, and that's probably the simplest one to implement. All it is on your UI touch property of when your user touches the screen, there's now a double on there that's just called force. And so that allows you to detect just how hard the user is pressing. And the most popular example of kind of where you'd use that is in an app where you're drawing. So for example, Snapchat, where you kind of draw on your selfies and whatever, will probably introduce pressure sensitivity so that the harder you press, the darker the color is that you're using, and or maybe it'll be a little transparent if you press lighter. So that's kind of the easiest kind of example of where you might want to use that. And then the second one is peek and pop, and almost any application can use this. So basically, if you have a table view in your app and you click an item and it goes to the details of that item, that's where you're going to want to use peek and pop. And this one's not as straightforward as pressure sensitivity to implement. I guess I wouldn't say as straightforward. It is very straightforward. It's just not as quick and easy. There's some methods you can override in your view controllers for this. We have pretty easy documentation. It's really quick. It's only an extra maybe 20 lines of code or something like that. And really, this is really kind of meant to engage your users. This is a really fun one because, you know, they press hard and it kind of comes up to a brief detail view. And if they're still interested, they click a little bit harder and it goes into the details as if they had just touched it in the first place. So it's cool. It's meant to kind of be engaging and interactive for users, really kind of an improvement to the user experience of iOS in general. And the third one is quick actions.
Before you go to quick actions, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to ask you about peek and pop.
Oh, for sure.
Let's say I have a traditional master detail page, and on the master page I've got a list of items, and on the detail page is a detail for each of those items. So I would normally press the item I'm interested in, let's say it's the third one, and that would take me to another page where the details are. That, in using peek and pop, that would still work, right? That's one way to navigate, is just touch it and go to the details page.
Yeah, that still works. So that's going to work kind of just how it did before. And then there's just a basically a property check that, you know, says is force touch available? And if it is, you register this delegate for that peek and pop.
Okay. And so then instead of just touching it, I press it a little harder and I get a preview of what I would see in the detail.
Yes,
and,
for sure.
And then press it harder still and go to the detail.
Yeah, and it would be as if you just clicked in the first place. And it's, sometimes people are like, oh, I don't know about this force touch. Seems like I might do it on accident. But it's actually, if you don't have a success, I really urge you, if you're an iOS developer, to at least go to the store and just play with one of the devices, because it's actually a lot more intuitive and easy to kind of run through than you might think.
And at the moment, that's not supported by the simulator. So you really do need to go out and buy the phone.
Right, yeah, if you're going to be developing for that. Yep.
Okay, and then the third way is quick action.
Yeah, so quick actions are easy to implement. So in your application delegate, there are new methods you can override for these quick actions. And really what they are is kind of context menus is what a lot of people are calling them. So if you were to, it's almost as like if you were to right-click on an icon on your home screen, it'll come up with the popular things that people do in that app. So a good example is if you press hard on like the texting application, it'll come up with options to, you know, write a new message or text the last two people that you talk to. So it's really easy to just kind of go in there and quickly send something without actually opening the application, having to navigate into where you want to go. So again, this is kind of another way that Apple's trying to engage users and kind of reduce the amount of times that they have to actually touch the screen. That's obviously kind of the goal in the end.
It's a great feature, but I have to say, if anybody from Apple is listening, that it would be really helpful to have a small icon on the tile telling me that that tile works.
Has quick actions.
Right. Because if you press on one that doesn't, you get the wiggle.
The delete. Yeah.
Right. Right. So
yeah, that's good.
Quick
that's
action good. Is very cool, but it's only implemented at the moment on a number of applications, and many don't have it.
Well, they should all have it, maybe.
That's the solution. Okay, and now my justification for going and getting an iPad Pro, which is multitasking, which again comes in three flavors, if I understand it. Slide over, split view, and picture in picture.
But the thing that's cool about multitasking is you don't really have to support these things individually. These are really just user choices. So slide over is going to be your app's going to come in from the side of the iPad as like a iPhone size. So it's very easy to kind of check Twitter, send a text really quick at the same time as another application. Then you have split view, which is either your app's either taking up half the screen or maybe a little less or more, because the user can kind of control the percentage of the screen that apps occupy. And then the last one's picture in picture. And that's really for if your app has video playback as its main function. That way users can watch a video while they're sending emails or whatever. But really the only thing you need to do to get ready for these is just use a storyboard with auto layout for your views, and also use a storyboard for your launch screen. This is something that Apple's kind of put in little things that are kind of pushing people this way. And I know a lot of people are kind of against storyboards and kind of hate them a bit. I'm a big fan of storyboards, though. I think they are a little weird at first, especially for a developer kind of wanting to do everything in code. But they're definitely helpful. And I think it's clear that Apple's pushing developers to actually use the storyboard with auto layout, because in each iteration of iOS, you'll notice that they've done a little bit of changes that are pushing people to do that. So definitely something, if you've got an app for iPad, that you'll want to take advantage of. And then going back to the Forms conversation, Forms applications will just work out of the box for multitasking because they are using auto layout. As long as you've got a storyboard for your launch screen, then you're good to go.
Okay, but for slide over and split view, there is no support for that in the simulator. Is that right?
That is right.
So what do you do about understanding how your application looks in those different views?
Split view is a little more difficult, but really what I do for this is put some constraints in, make sure I've got that storyboard with constraints, and then I'll look at my storyboard in every different size of the iPad and every different size of the iPhone. And that'll give you a pretty good understanding of how that app resizes, especially how it runs in portrait and landscape. You've got to definitely support both. So basically what they want you to do in this situation is have your app resize in every way possible. So just checking it with as many different resolutions as you can is really the best way to test if you're only working with the simulator.
Got it. Okay, there has been a change, as I understand it, to the address book, which is now called Contacts. Other than the name change, is there anything significant here?
Not really for developers. I think it's made it a little bit more straightforward to actually grab contacts and add them. So it's a little bit of less lines of code, but pretty much the name has changed and all the methods are mostly the same. So it's really just if you have that address book name within your application, you're going to need to go ahead and move that over to the contacts namespace instead. But for the most part, everything works the same. It's just kind of a little more integrated. And it gives the user a little more privacy, I think, as well, because you've got to do a little bit more to grab their entire address book. Make sure that they actually approve you to do that in their settings.
One of the new features in iOS 9 that I know is going to have a big impact on users, but perhaps you can help us understand the impact on developers, is the new search APIs.
Yes, the search API. So this is, as a developer and also a user, my favorite thing about iOS 9. So what the search APIs have done is it's an extension from the handoff API. And it allows you to index information in your application either privately, publicly, or both. So every application can take advantage of this. An example we use a lot at Xamarin is the Monkeys application. So if you look at a blog post that we wrote about this, you'll probably see that as an example. So it's basically, I click on this orangutan monkey. And then when I get to the details of that view, I privately and publicly index all the information about that monkey. And the private index allows my user to search within Spotlight and find my application and without actually going to it. So this, again, would work for like Facebook. Facebook could privately index that I've gone to Joe Smith's profile. And then when I search Joe Smith in Spotlight, Facebook can just come up right there and I wouldn't have to go into Facebook and search. So it's just really, again, I think Apple's trying to make sure that you can do things from the home screen rather than actually having to go through your applications. But as a developer, the coolest part about this search API is that when you index this information, you index, the more likely your app's going to get suggested as a download. So say again, the monkey situation, say, you know, per day, I've got 500 users going to the details of that monkey page. That private activity, or that NS user activity, is going to be indexed publicly that many times. And so the more it's in there, the more likely when a person who doesn't have my app installed searches for orangutan, they would get my app as a suggestion for downloads. So especially if your app like solves a problem that people have, like maybe I like to use like a 7-minute workout example. So you could obviously index information to that your app. Hey, we have 7-minute workouts for, you know, push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, all these different things. And you can actually index information from your website as well. So the more info you've got up there, the more likely your app is to be suggested to users. And of course, this is going to increase downloads and really just increase, you know, user satisfaction when you're actually indexing that information for them. And it's easy for them to search through Spotlight.
Okay, great. I'm working my way down the page of iOS 9 features. And the next one that I see is the stack view. And the description says that this makes it easier to handle various layouts. But it certainly doesn't sound easier. So perhaps you can give me a little insight into how this works and how this saves time or effort.
Yes, for sure. So stack view works as though, so say a bunch of layers in a view, I'm going to have that constraint those in order for to get them, you know, the proper spacing apart from one another and also from the sides of the screen and stuff. But the stack view will do that for you out of the box. And so it really just kind of leverages the power of auto layout and size classes to kind of manage those subviews. And you can either use it horizontally or vertically. And it just kind of really dynamically responds to the screen size and stuff without you having to do any extra work. So it's awesome. And of course, those of us coming from like XAML or using Xamarin Forms are going to be pretty comfortable in that stack view area because it's really sort of just like if you were to use stack layout in Xamarin Forms.
Okay, that sounds like a great feature. Now, that's to be distinguished from collection views. And collection views have apparently also changed. And one of the things that I'm reading is that it supports drag and drop reordering of items.
Yeah, so it always has supported the drag and drop reordering of items, but there was a little bit of extra things you had to do. And so basically they just added some methods to the collection view delegate and data source for you to be able to support that kind of more out of the box rather than kind of rolling your own solution for that. So it's really just made it a little bit easier to support that drag of items, and it's a little more performant as a result.